Good morning, Council. I'd like to call this meeting to order and begin by acknowledging that we are Mi'kma'ki, the traditional territory of the Mi'kmaq people. Are there any announcements, acknowledgements, or recognitions? We do have a proclamation, International Women's Day. Yay. And as per our policy, Mayor Bolivar-Getson will be reading that proclamation.
Okay, Wednesday, March 8th, 2023. Whereas International Women's Day is celebrated globally on March 8th by those who believe in gender equality and who seek to improve the lives of all women and girls, trans, and cis, two-spirit, and gender peoples through cultural, legal, economic, and social change. And whereas on the 112th International Women's Day, we must all fully embrace equity. IWD 2023's campaign theme of Embrace Equity aims to get the world talking about why equal opportunities are no longer enough. And whereas women and girls in particular, women with disabilities, racialized women, immigrant women, two-spirit, and gender-diverse peoples experience many forms of oppression. And whereas International Women's Day is a time to work toward a world where each woman and girl can exercise her choice, such as participating in politics, getting an education, having an income, and living in societies free from violence and discrimination. And whereas the municipality of the District of Lunenburg is committed to promoting equity and justice and will continue to work to address the systemic and structural oppressions that perpetuate inequality, inequity. Now, therefore, I, Mayor Carolyn Bolivar-Getson, do hereby proclaim March 8, 2023 as International Women's Day in the municipality of the District of Lunenburg. So, happy International Women's Day, everyone.
Thank you.
And I so proclaim.
And there's no public input that I can see. Approval of the agenda. Approval of the agenda. Moved by Councillor Greek, seconded by Councillor Oikle. All those in favor? Motion carried unanimously. Approval of minutes of February 7th, 2023. What's your wish?
Moved.
Moved by Mayor Bolivar-Getson, seconded by Deputy Mayor Pam Hoadley. All those in favor? Motion carried unanimously. And we will go right down to Finance Department. Tax exemption for nonprofit organizations, policy 012. And Elena?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Director of Finance.
Director of Finance, yes, thank you. So as Council may be aware, you have a policy, number 12, that provides for a full or partial tax exemption to certain qualifying nonprofit organizations demonstrating service to the community at Council's discretion as per 71 of the Municipal Government Act. A major consideration for this tax exemption is a service the organization provides to the community. The policy sets out the qualification parameters, and tax exemptions are required to be renewed every 3 years. So this year we have a list of three new qualifying properties. It's exactly the same organization. The amount and type of the tax exemption is determined by whether or not it's residential or commercially assessed. So if the organization had a commercial tax assessment, the rebate would reduce the tax. It would otherwise be payable if the property were residential, and if it was a residential property tax assessment or resource, a full tax exemption would be provided. On your list is Le Havre Coastal Conservancy Association, and there are three properties with resource assessments that are looking for a full tax exemption. The total is $81. The Havre Coastal, I'm not sure if I didn't really put it in the report, but they are a relatively new charitable organization. They're a registered charity. They're similar to King's Coastal Conservancy and MICA, where they are. They have several properties that they are now starting to steward that have ecologically sensitive habitats, and they're protecting the environment for the benefit of the public. Last year, they did plant more than 100 trees and gave away almost 100 more as part of an educational outreach. They have about 40 members, and they're growing. And so they are requesting it. As far as your policy goes, it does meet the qualifications of the policy as they're a registered nonprofit or a registered charity, but it is Council's discretion on whether or not they give this tax exemption.
Okay. Discussion. Councillor Statton.
Thank you. Just a quick question. Where are these three properties located? It would be nice for public knowledge.
The properties are in the Dublin Shore area. So at the the area that they are conserving is out on the Lehave Island side, so like from Mount Pleasant down through Dublin Shore and in around like Belle Island and those islands. So they do have a website and they show that area, but that's where these properties are located.
Thank you.
Okay. Any more discussion? I would ask Councillor Bell if he would like to put the motion on the floor.
Thank you. To the Chair and members of the Finance Committee, I move that the Finance Committee recommend to Council that Municipal Council approve full tax exemption for three properties owned by Lehave Coastal Conservation Association, AA numbers 01811576, 10044995, and 11007880, as per Policy 12 Tax Exemption Reduction Policy, with a 3-year renewal term. Thank you.
Seconder? Seconded by Councillor Haysom. Discussion? Ready for the question?
Question?
All those in favor? Motion carried unanimously. And now 11.1.2, 2023-24 draft capital budget. And is this the Director of Finance again? Elena, thank you.
Yes, thank you, Your Worship. So I will bring up
I like that.
A slideshow that we have that goes with the draft capital budget that was in your agenda package. So this is your draft 23-24 capital budget and Canada Community Building Fund investment plan. So at, have you shared it yet? I'm clerk.
Just waiting for it to come up on our screens.
My apologies.
There we go. Thank you.
Wonderful. So we'll look right at our budget process and schedule. So we go through several steps before we get to a budget approval. We start with public consultation. Council approves our strategic priorities. We do workshops, and this is the Finance Committee meeting. It's the first committee meeting discussing your capital budget, and we work towards budget approval. So we start pretty much in November in the fall and work our ways right to the first week of May for hopefully to get budget approval at that time. So capital planning is important. It helps your decision-making. So we know that our priorities and our decisions feed into our long-term capital plan, which makes your capital budget. Capital is the foundation of the services we provide. So Council recently set a vision and also their strategic priorities. So Council's vision, the breathtaking natural beauty of the municipality, the District of Lunenburg, is home to thriving communities with unique cultural identities. Growth centers support our diversified economies, driven by our residents' passion for the place they call home. With our strong economy, we can live, work, and raise families here. We are a destination for visitors attracted to our vibrant parks, beaches, and hiking trails. As leaders in sustainability, we passionately protect our natural environment. So this vision feeds into the five strategic priorities: the Osprey Village Growth Center, Climate Change Action Plan, Recreate Parks, MODL 2040, and Emerging Issues. When we look at our capital budget, we have to look at potential sources of funding. We have a grant coordinator, and we look for grants in every nook and cranny that we can find before we would look at our own money. So we look for grants. We use our unrestricted reserves. We use contributions from our operating fund towards capital and reserves. We are in the process of selling land, which feeds into funding for our capital budget. Third-party contributions, like collaborations with other municipal units. And alternate revenue sources, green energy, and if we have a gap at the end, we look at debt to address that. So the five-year cost project cost projection is our current list has $9.4 million in year one and $61.8 million in years two to five. These address your strategic priorities. The combined reserve balance is under the FCI threshold in years three to five. We do require debt financing in years two, three, and five, totaling about $12 million for wastewater treatment and the proposed solar garden. So when we do look at debt, we have to think about it as a strategic tool. Debt management policy and communication of that policy is a key component to our capital plan, and debt can be viewed strategically. We're going concern, so debt can be leveraged up to 20 years. It does give us intergenerational equity. We can use our debt facilities. Future residents are paying for their fair share of a capital project, and it's a shield against inflation. As project costs go up in the future, debt kind of provides some protection for that. I think you kind of look at it with buying a house. You wouldn't normally buy a house with cash. You'd get a mortgage with payments you can afford. So we do borrow strategically. If we want to borrow, we would borrow strategically so that we would have assets to service the public now, and those assets are paid for over the time that they're used. So when we look at the projects, this is Council's budget, so projects can be kept on the list, projects can be deferred or eliminated as determined by Council, and staff are here to help you guide these decisions. So if we look at our overview of our budget, we have 45 projects in year one, totaling $9.4 million. So there's $1.6 million in corporate infrastructure, $1.7 million in trail development, $1 million in climate change mitigation and adaptation, $974,000 in parks and open spaces, $675,000 in economic development projects, $550,000 in paving projects, water, wastewater, and environmental protection projects are $2.8 million. Funding for these capital projects come from a variety of sources. The biggest one is our general operating reserves at $3 million. Canada Community Building Fund is $1.9 million. Open space is small, $50,000. Sewer reserves, $570,000. Depreciation reserves, $425,000. And provincial and federal grants of $2.8 million. Looking at years two to five, you can see that water and wastewater projects are the biggest chunk of that, and that includes the construction of a water tower in Osprey Village, Cookville treatment plant upgrades to New Germany and Hebville. Climate change and mitigation and adaptation projects include a planned community solar garden and solar panels installed on several municipal wastewater treatment plants. Trail development includes the construction of a pedestrian bridge across the 103 at exit 12 and upgrades to existing trails. Corporate infrastructure and accessibility projects include funds for making municipal facilities and parks accessible, upgrading parks based on upcoming park standards. The paving projects include continuing to partner with Nova Scotia Public Works to pave J-class roads, paving shoulders on existing roads when opportunities arise, and new curbing and sidewalks in Osprey Village. Economic development projects include completing the internet connectivity project, wayfinding, Osprey Village beautification, and extending Champlain to facilitate development. Parks and open spaces include funds for future land purchases, park and road upgrades, new amenities at Osprey Village pickleball courts once constructed based on community consultation. Using our five-year financial strategy and our five-year plan, it does include a capital borrowing to offset the depletion of reserves, trying to ensure they don't fall below the FCI thresholds. The operating reserve indicator, which is your projected reserves on the left, doesn't fall below the FCI 10% indicator, but the combined reserves do fall below the 40% indicator. The indicator is calculated by taking the total reserve balances over what the province considers our total expenditures, which are essentially all of our expenses less the provincial contributions that we make for education, assessment, corrections, housing, and library. And then we add back our amortization expense. So when looking at this budget, staff also put it in an option. We could reduce that gap if we drew $3.5 million more out of reserves in year two. It would bring us very close to the operating reserve threshold, and it would deplete the capital, the combined reserve gap. I guess it would be higher. However, it is an option that we could put in this budget to reduce the capital borrowing in year two. We also looked. Oh, sorry.
But there is still capital borrowing in year two.
Yes, there
even
is.
Doing that.
Even doing that, there is. We would reduce it. We'd essentially borrow for the solar garden, but not for the wastewater treatment plant. So we also looked at the FCI indicator comparisons for all of the rurals in Nova Scotia. We thought that might, to see where we were kind of on that grid. We're the green line on the combined or on the operating reserves. So it's putting us, you know, we're at the top tier of municipal units with high reserves. Now, if we drew 3.5 more, it would take us down, it would take us down about 10% on each side. But it is an option, and I thought it was good. We discussed it might be a good idea to have you have a look at that to see kind of where we are compared to other municipal units. So that kind of ends the overview, and we're going to start looking at individual capital projects. So I would ask...
Are there any questions before we move into the individual projects? Councillor Stanton.
Thank you. When we suggest borrowing, and we borrow from our reserves, we borrow from the Municipal Finance Corporation, where does that leave us in terms of applying for grants from other levels of government? Does it affect us negatively or positively?
CAO, Alex?
Yep. So excellent question. It's not a factor in terms of grant applications. The only instance where borrowing could have a negative effect is where you're doing a significant amount of borrowing and you might end up exceeding 15% of borrowing costs compared to your own source revenue. Then it becomes harder to borrow more money. So it's separate. The grant process is unaffected. In fact, you become, more eligible for grants because it indicates you're making larger capital purchases, which means you have more access, more projects that can draw down funding. But they don't consider, I'm not aware of any grant that takes into account borrowing levels when assessing whether or not to award the grants. Where it does come into play is the province will assess your capacity to repay. So they do that by measuring your debt service costs, which is a measure of principal and interest divided by your own source revenue. When that exceeds 15%, it becomes a more rigorous review. It also flags on your indicator. So then they may, if you get into a significant financial pickle, then they sometimes ask for additional reporting or additional financial plans. As you can see, for example, Cape Breton Regional Municipality has some of that type of thing happening. Other municipalities have been through that. That's not contemplated in any of these scenarios because we wouldn't be close to that 15%.
It's like getting a good or bad credit score.
Yes, yeah, but it only applies to borrowing. It doesn't apply
to grants. Oh.
Okay. Any more questions before we continue? No? Okay.
Could I ask the directors to come up to the microphones across here so that as we move forward, if I'll get you to present your own individual slides, I think we'll work that way, hopefully.
And we have our Director of Engineering, Stephen Pace, on Teams.
Or am I doing that one? Okay so we're doing good. Just in case, that way if you have questions, they're right here. It'll be a little bit easier. So the first one is accessibility legislation placeholder. We put that under emerging issues as a strategic priority. We know the provincial regulations are coming out, and this is a placeholder for accessible upgrades to buildings, municipal services, building marks, and public washrooms. So it's $125,000 a year. We do ramp it up in years 2 to 5, so it's a $1.1 million in total. We're estimating 50% grants and 50% reserves. And then we move on to rec assets.
Yes, we've budgeted $125,000 for this year, and as council is aware, we're looking at having five park audits conducted. I'm working with engineering to hire an architect to do those for us. We're hoping that those audits will be completed sometime in September, October. So we're looking at that those funds to look at some perhaps some of the easier things that we can do to address accessibility once those park audits are completed. So we'll be looking at trying to brand and make things consistent with our trash stations, our tables, our shelters, our washrooms from an accessibility point of view.
I do have a question, if I may, unless someone else wants to speak first. The five park audits, do you know which parks they are yet, or just...
Yes, I do. And now you're testing my memory. Hurdles Beach, Mush, Marta's going to bring that. Miller, thank you.
River Ridge,
yes, is one of them. And then I want to say La Have, but I don't hold me to that. No, Wilds Lake is going to have the community plan, and Mark is going to have the community plan, the same with Saw Pit. Okay. So it is River Ridge, Miller, Mush, Hurdles, Indian Falls. Okay, thank you.
Oh, it is on the next. I had that covered over.
That's what
with
I mean.
Paper.
It's on the next slide.
It
I think
it's on the next slide.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So we didn't put in the numbers here because it's on the council's details. So yeah, this is the same thing. I think that we both of those are going hand in hand, Trudy, aren't they? The accessibility and the standards and upgrades.
Well, and then we're doing the strategic priority was to recreate parks. So. We're having the workshop this afternoon around the park standards. So we've budgeted funds to look at trying to meet those minimum standards, and the park audits will also help because they're looking through an accessibility lens, but they're also to look at other things that we could do to improve that aligns with our standards.
Mayor Bolivar-Getson, did you have a question or a comment?
Yes, just in relation to that there. I guess before we go through the standards, we really don't know yet.
No, and that's why we've we'll be introducing the standards, and we'll be introducing minimum standards if council agrees. I don't want to set the expectation that you're automatically going to be able to set your priorities because this is
yes.
The first high level of the park standards. So
yeah.
If you agree with that 30-foot view, then we'll be going to the next phase to really pare it down around maintenance standards, which I know engineering is working on. But we did want to have some funds because we do have a number of parks, so we want to at least bring those to the minimum standards that we're recommending this afternoon and looking at other opportunities based on the direction of what council provides from a capital perspective.
Okay, thank you. Continue.
Okay. Do you want to speak to the Mark Ball Fields? Future.
Just gonna keep my mic on. Yes, so we have budgeted $40,000. This is to $400,000.
Yeah.
to mitigate our grub issue. We have in past years been successful in the nematodes, but we haven't had as much success. So engineering has been working with a firm around what we need to do to mitigate the grub issue and to bring the ball fields up to the repairs that are needed to make a safe playing surface for our users. And we are looking at other options such as irrigation, but we're not sure if we'll go down that road. We're waiting on the experts to give us that direction. So we're putting funds to hope bring those fields to a plain level that will be safe for our users for years to come, not just this year, but for years to come.
Okay, thank you.
Move on to the Mark Facility Reimagining.
Yes, so that is community consultation and design around the Mark Reimagining. So the first piece will be around the community consultation, and based on that we'll be asking a consultant to put forth a design based on that input and council's input and the number of stakeholders. So the first part would be the community consultation that will lead to the design.
Mayor Bolivar-Getson?
And I see out in 2028 there's a $5 million price tag, but we did learn from an accessibility perspective that the regulations have somewhat softened based on what we originally were told, correct?
That's correct. And my understanding when Ms. Stegen was here making the presentation to council around the accessibility standards, it's you will only need to meet those building standards if it's a major renovation, if it's a major renovation or a new build. If you're, you know, if you're doing regular operational or maintenance, it does not necessarily. So, for example, the program building, unless we were doing major renovations, the third floor is not accessible. We wouldn't necessarily have to make it accessible if we were investing in making some upgrades to that, as long as it wasn't a major renovation.
Okay, great. So there's a municipal services building final cost. I think we've discussed this. We're working on the HVAC system. It's a third-party warranty, so it is a carryover. So we know we're going to get at least $400,000 out of the warranty itself, and hopefully it won't cost any more than that. I know they've been working hard at it and continue to do so to get the HVAC system up and running properly. Okay. The Municipal Services Building Office reconfiguration. This is an emerging issue and an ongoing capital requirement. The Municipal Services Building has a storage area in the back that was designed to become office space when a need arose. We estimate that the need has happened, so we're looking to take that storage room and convert it to office space, and we're estimating about $100,000 to make sure the HVAC system's working in it, all the electrical and things like that they would need to do to make it into offices. Okay. Public mooring installations. This is a collaborative project with Mahone Island Conservation Association, 50% MICA and 50% municipal reserves, $40,000 to install 20 public buoys. The engineering department electric vehicle, this was pre-approved by council. We're awaiting delivery. We don't expect it to be here before April 1st, so we kept it in, put it into year one just so it's being paid out of the upcoming fiscal budget. It's part of your climate change action plan to electrify the municipal fleet. The tax bill portal. This is a project that.
Councilor Oracle.
Through the chair, I've noticed that you have. You just showed us the engineering department vehicle, but then in the next block down, you have the building inspection vehicle replacement, and we did have two. But there's nothing listed there on my sheet.
Because they're already received. We're getting them out of the current year's budget. So these, this is for anything April 1st on.
Okay.
Yeah.
So all right. And so then we're not looking at getting any more vehicles until year three?
Yes, that's correct, in the vehicle replacement plan. So what these slides will correspond with year one on the sheet that you have.
Okay. Thank you.
That's helpful. Sorry, I should have said that in the beginning. So the tax bill portal is something we've been working on and ran into some hiccups in the past year, hence it's a carryover. What it's essentially to do is $15,000 to purchase software for online access for customers to be able to retrieve their tax bills online. It would also include electronic employee pay stubs. It's been carried over due to the IT requirements. We are working with our IT department and our software providers to resolve the issues identified so that we can move forward with this. I'm now on page 2 of 7, I think.
Oh, there it is. Okay.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. this is an engineering project to do a facility and energy assessment at the CES building and building upgrades. So they're looking to do that assessment for energy upgrades and for safety and accessibility options. There's a grant in year one and with some estimated costs in future years to help move that along. Jeff, do you want to speak about the solar panels at the municipal building?
Yeah, this is the one It's currently underway. They ran into some delays with the weather and being up on a slippery metal roof. So this one will be finished off into this upcoming fiscal year.
Okay. Any questions before we continue? Okay.
This one is a new solar project, so this will be at the Conquerel Bank Wastewater Treatment Plant, and that's to install 10-kilowatt system as part of our climate action plan. Okay.
Councilor Haysom?
Thank you. Are there no funding or grant opportunities for installing solar?
The last we looked, there wasn't a lot of funds for solar, but we are still working with our grant coordinator. So if anything pops up between now and we do the project, we 100% will be applying for something.
Deputy CAO Alex DeMere.
Yeah, just to add on to that, we haven't found any funds specifically dedicated to solar. But we have been able to get funding for some projects that include solar, where they're more broadly about sustainability or increasing environmental, greening your operations type things. And, you know, for like the solar panel project on the building, I believe we're able to get some for our solar garden project. For the feasibility stuff, we've been able to find funding for those. So whenever we can't find funding specifically for the type of project we're doing, we look at, you know, funds that say things like, we're looking for innovative projects, and then we highlight how innovative our project is, or we look for sustainability language and then push that angle of the project.
Okay.
Speaking in the community solar garden.
So under your climate change action plan, we've identified that we can construct a community solar garden in collaboration with four other municipal units. There is a Sustainable Communities Challenge Fund application for 80% of year one. We can make a decision on whether or not you want to move forward with that project, I think, once we work with that, and it would be working with area to construct a solar garden on municipal property.
Councilor Greek.
Thank you. Could somebody just provide a quick overview of what the community solar garden is?
Certainly. And
CAO, Tom.
So the community solar garden would be a larger scale project, but similar in scope to what Berwick, Antigonish, and Mahone Bay are doing. So it would be a 5-megawatt system on land that the municipality owns. It would, all of the construction work is managed by area. A 5-megawatt solar garden would be the equivalent of powering 700 homes with solar, or I think planting 150,000 trees. And once we know more about the green energy program that will be released by the province later this summer, we can look at what options we have to allow for subscription models to move forward so that the public can actually buy into the solar garden and get some energy credits back. But at this point, we are at phase one, which is doing all the sort of the pre-application work, and we're waiting to hear from the NSFM on the Sustainable Community Challenge Fund to see if we were successful on our we requested a grant for 80% of the phase one, $220,000. So at this point, all council is committed to doing is working on phase one, and that's going to depend upon the grant that comes out. But area has located three potential sites for us. The preferred site is still next to the MJSB, and they're having discussions with Nova Scotia Power to see if we can extend the line down to the power station on the 325, so that there's an issue because there's two wind turbines that are taking up some of the capacity, so we have to find a way around those. So that's what's being looked at now.
Thank you. Councilor Vino.
Thank you. Just looking for clarification, the $220,000, we're hoping that 80% of that number would be covered, or that's what's remaining after 80%?
Tom?
Yep. My understanding is we applied for 80 funding for that cost, and the funding is at 80%. Mm-hmm. So not sure what the math works out to, but 80% of 220,000.
Okay. No more questions? You can continue, Elena.
Great, certainly. I'll turn this one over to Alex for the Petite Riviere Watershed.
So this project is looking at flooding on the Petite Riviere, specifically around the Fancy Lake area. We recently held a public meeting on this. The consultants are working on a final report, which will include the engineering options that they prepared, as well as incorporating public input. This is a bit of a placeholder in terms of the cash value that's in here. So this could provide for the development of a monitoring and warning system, if that's the route that the consultants recommend and council adopts. It could also include some further engineering studies on a small scale if there are some tweaks or adjustments that council would like to further explore. There is also the option that council doesn't proceed any further with this project, at least not at the current time, given that there was some call from the Heavy Building Commission to have some more time to do some meetings and discussions on their own.
Councillor Bell.
Thank you. I'm not completely sure what you just said about the $20,000, because 5 years ago, we had $20,000, most of which came from the Petite Riviere Watershed Advisory Committee when they disbanded, which was enough to do option 3 5 years ago. Now, here we are 5 years later, still talking about it, and I would like to ask today how much we spent to CBCL for the study that we've done over the last 3 years. Does anyone have that figure?
Not at my fingertips, but I can absolutely get that and provide it to council members. And you're correct. There was it was just over $9,000 from the group that disbanded, and the community members that were associated with it were happy for that to go towards the cost of phase one of this current iteration, which was simply to identify where the flood risk was. So you saw some of that information presented again at the public meeting. There was a more expensive phases two and three, which involved exploring a large number of options, narrowing that down to three with a couple of sub-options in there. But there were some more detailed pre-design work done, which included some cost estimates. And you're right, there is a bit of a circular element to this project, because there is some the project itself is focused exclusively on flood mitigation, but there are also concerns raised from the community around the ability to conduct recreational activities and to have a higher water level in the summer, as well as some residents who have identified concern about changes in the lake level affecting their ability to draw water for domestic supply. And so that certainly leans towards a certain set of options which are far more expensive than, for example, a monitoring and warning system.
Councillor Bell.
Thank you. This did start out as a monitoring and warning system, and after the flooding event a few years ago, I forget the year right now, I certainly supported that, and we owed it to the people who live in that area. But since then, it's taken on a whole new look. And I understand that after the meeting that was hosted in this room last week, that there's now an option 4 circulating. And I'm just wondering who is going to finance that, and why are we accepting a option 4 when we have 3 options now? And my concern is giving people warning when we have such an event like this. But I'm not sure that I want to look at options of making sure that the lake level is at a level for recreational use, and for those who use the lake for drawing water for domestic purposes, I believe if you lived anywhere else in the municipality, you would probably be drilling a well. And I know that people in District 2, some of them, have done two or three wells over the years because they turn salt water after a few years' use. It's a continual expense to the people who live along the river. And it's probably, if we're going to be spending $7 million or whatever for 29 homes, I'd like to spend $1 million and provide some funding for people in District 2 who are on the second, third, and fourth well because of conditions that they may have not known existed when they built their homes. I think we have to really look at this closely. I don't want to sound like a mean Grinch, but I'm also concerned with some of the options that I feel threaten people in District 1 who live along Petite River, who have recreational properties there that might see a sudden surge of water, or in the summertime, no water at all. And I think that we should be considering their concerns as well. I don't want to draw this out, but I do feel we need to have a serious conversation about where we are going about this.
Thank you. Councilor Staton?
Just a quick question, if I might. This is in the Public Service Commission's water reserve, I'm understanding, is it not?
Fancy Lake is below the area that's
so
controlled.
So it's got nothing to do with the Public Service Commission water supply.
Well, the Public Service Commission controls part of the Petite watershed, so it's upriver from this.
And what is their involvement in this study or this whatever's going on there? What's their involvement? Is there any involvement from them?
Yes. So over the first, second, and third phases of the project, the staff from the Public Service Commission have been involved. They've seen some of the potential options. They've also provided some really useful information on the changes that have been made to the dam structure at Hebb's Dam, which is just upriver from Fancy Lake, since the large flooding event in the mid-2000s. And they've provided information on how they operate the release of water. Also, since the beginning of the third phase, they've started sharing information about when they are considering making operational decisions. So you may have seen this past winter, they shared information with us, which we were then able to share with the public, that the water level was high and they were considering removing one of the barriers, which would increase the flow of water. Ultimately, they didn't have to do that, but we certainly felt that was a very positive sign that not only were they happy to share information, we were able to issue a joint release and keep residents informed. So that's sort of a mini version of what some of that resiliency option would look like. So they're not involved in the discussions around any intrusive measures because they are downriver, but they're certainly very keen on being informed on what's happening, and they've indicated a willingness to work closely with us in terms of monitoring and communication with the residents.
Thank you.
Mayor Balavagetson?
Thank you. I guess after the meeting the other night, I understand where Councillor Bell is coming from, and I will guarantee this council that, yes, there will be further discussion on this at a future meeting. But as far as costs associated with this, I did sit in on some of these meetings, and I do know that there is money available through the federal and provincial governments. I think it's part of the ICIP money. Maybe it's a different stream in relation to structures and so on. There has been absolutely no decisions made by this council, and in most cases where this would result in a my chair just keeps going down bit by bit here. I'll soon be under the table. when it's something to a specific area, area rates can apply. So it may be the case that area rates would apply to that area to, in order to cover the cost of whatever the remaining balance was. I know this is not being talked about in public, but it's definitely something that this council will have to look at if we so wish to go that path whatsoever. And I am not suggesting that we are. I am just saying that all those things would be on the table, and we do need to publicly talk about that because it's definitely something that could happen. So looking at that, and yes, we have received since that meeting another option that did come forward from the Hebbville Village Commission, who is asking to have that put on the table. And again, that will be council to put on a future agenda to discuss this very much in depth.
Thank you.
Any more questions before we move on? Continue, Elena.
Thank you. So we're looking at public transit projects in Osprey Village, and I believe Jeff can speak to this.
Yeah, so in year one, we have $250,000 to purchase a electric bus, and this is the connection between Bridgewater Transit and Osprey Village. This is not the... We're also looking at the Internal Transportation Committee has had presentations from Mr. Ramey and Mr. Kerwin about a different type of transit system. So this is not that, and this is also not the newly rebranded Lunenburg County Wheels.
Councilor Haysom.
Thank you very much. To that, Mr. Merrill, I'm just wondering why we don't have anything as we look forward through years 2 to 5, anticipating that there are going to be costs associated with both of those potential projects.
Yeah, at this point, we don't have the business plan created for that. So once we have that business plan, we'll have numbers for future years.
Councillor Haysom.
Thank you. I would just suggest it might be wise to have a placeholder there. I know we have placeholders in other budget lines, so I think it would be wise to have something there. Thank you.
Okay. Councillor Oigle.
Yes, through the chair, I'm just wondering, it says purchase 2 electric buses, no grant if used. There are used electric buses already in circulation. I just find that odd considering that they're kind of a new thing.
Yeah, I'm not aware if there's used electric buses at this point. I know there's traditional fossil fuel buses that are used.
Because it says purchase 2 electric buses to use first few years until route established, then electrify the fleet. So I'm just kind of confused by the statement. If we're already having electric buses, why do we need to electrify the fleet if it's already been electrified? Oh, it's a typo. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Mayor Bolov-Getson?
I guess I would rather see this. We have not made a decision to partner with the Bridgewater Transit at this point, and that is what you're saying this is for?
This is would account for
when this you get your business plan. This is buying buses to add an extra bus to the Bridgewater Transit. I guess I would rather see this earmarked as transit because there has been no decision made, and that way it does definitely offset what Councillor Haysom has indicated, which is definitely the case that there will be dollars needed as we move forward with transit, whatever direction that takes. So I guess public transit, Osprey Village, I would rather see it as a place saver than to commit council to something that they have not agreed to yet.
Okay. Any more discussion? You've got that noted, Elena? Perfect.
Okay. Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I do have that noted, so we'll update that note for our next round. The next one is, I think, our EV charger study, Jeff.
Yes, so this is 25,000. This is a project staff weren't able to get to this past fiscal year, but this will look at our municipality and where are the best locations to put charging infrastructure to encourage that transition to electric vehicles for everyone. And the outcomes might not necessarily be the municipality funding the chargers, but we'd have a study that would look at where the best locations would be in our municipality.
Okay. Councillor Vino.
For the study, this is something that we have to hire out for. It can't be done in-house to save that additional $25,000 cost.
Yeah. So HRM had a study done, so we're looking at a study similar to them. Yeah, and I guess we, from the resources side, we thought that we would outsource that project.
Just a follow-up comment. HRM seems much more elaborate than what municipality might be, but if that's what we have to do, I just wanted to make that comment that if it could be done in-house and save that cost, it would be nice, and not to compare us to HRM for this study.
Thank you. Okay.
Okay, we'll move on. Okay, the next on the list is our EV fleet chargers, which Council's already pre-approved, where it's in year one because we expect that we won't get them installed until after April 1st.
Yeah, after the snow goes away.
Councillor Grieg.
Thank you, Chair. Just comparing the two, it says EV charger study and installation $25,000 and EV fleet chargers $120,000. And the comments over there, it might not be owned infrastructure for the study installation. Is it, I'm just wondering if the $95,000 price difference is owning and not owning, and is there an option? Like, do you have to own them if they're here? If we install them other places with this after the study, who owns them?
Yeah, so
who would be paying that $90,000?
Yeah, so the difference, the $25,000 is a study, so that's not actual like infrastructure in the ground. The 120, those are chargers here at the municipal building for our fleet, the electrification of our fleet vehicles. So those we will own. That will be our infrastructure. But when you look at transitioning, so this is our corporate side, this 120. But the study looks at the community side, and where do you put the chargers at the community scale, not the corporate? So this would be to transition our residents as they transition to electric vehicles. Like, where's the need? Like, the DC fast chargers, the price tag comes with $150,000 each. We currently only have one in our municipality over at the Best Western. But those are costs that, you know, maybe the municipality doesn't need to do that. How does private, you know, how do we encourage private business to invest in the EV infrastructure so it's not the municipality footing the bill for that?
Can I ask a follow-up?
Of course.
So where it says EV charger study and installation, it doesn't actually mean installation, study only.
Yes, the $25,000 is just the study. It's not the installation.
Okay.
Councillor Stack.
That's a little confusing since we're not responsible for transportation. Why would we study where to put chargers? Why wouldn't that be something the Department of Transportation or private business would do as opposed to this municipality? That's a little confusing why we're studying where to put chargers if we're not interested in having them on municipal property, then why isn't that delegated to a private business to put them where they want, or Department of Transportation? I'm not quite sure I understand why we are involved in that, to do a study on that.
Yeah, so this would be looking to accelerate that transition to, like, trying to accelerate that transition to electrification of our community with vehicles. But you need to have chargers, and there's chargers that you would have. You know, when you go to electric vehicles, you'd have charging in your house. But at the community side, you know, for ones, folks that are moving through our community or doing longer trips need to have the faster charging infrastructure that would be put in place. You know, if we don't do it, I'm not aware that transportation or public works is at the provincial level is doing that.
Councillor Stanton.
I'm sorry to ask the difficult question, and I know you don't have all the answers. I'm just wondering why, as a municipality, we're involving ourselves in this project when it should be private business or maybe provincial government to have them across the province for accessibility, as opposed to us as a small municipality taking on a study as to where we might want to see them. That's. I was just questioning what the relevance of that study would be and why we're making that a municipal project.
Yeah.
And I know you may not have all the answers right now,
yeah.
But
yeah.
We're doing budgets, and I'm
which one, you or him?
I'm trying to understand where we're
yeah.
allocating all our
yeah.
money and why.
Number one,
yeah.
number two.
So the study would give you, like, here's locations and then, like, a timeline. Like, so as EVs ramp up in our community, like, how many chargers do you need at, like, space them out, like, to be able to, like, you don't need all the chargers all at once, but you need to have that transition and that ramp as more people adopt electric vehicles. So that study would have that timeline, and it might, like, and I don't think it's the municipality investing in all the EV infrastructure, like, so we're trying to spark a change that's, you know,
thank
not
you,
thank occurring
you, Jeff.
Okay, I'm going to move it over now. I'll take you off the hot seat, Jeff, and put Tom on.
Just to sort of help with the discussion. So in the municipal electric vehicle strategy that was done by HRM, they have a whole section on public charging infrastructure, and it sets out the basic need of the municipality with recommendations on where the infrastructure should be placed, with the intent that that information is then taken to government and private industry to try to get government and private industry to buy into the strategy and put them where it's recommended that they go. So, for instance, in HRM, they focused on a lot of their parks and recreation areas, but they also look at, like, RBC Centre in Burnside and approaching RBC to see if they would be willing to match the strategy and put the EV charging stations in. So rather than just leaving it out to private industry to put it where they want to, the strategy is intended to take the best option for providing the best coverage for the most people in a rural district, and then trying to use that information to support private industry and government with funding. But the report's available online, 72 pages long, but it does have some interesting information on the theory behind the strategy.
Okay, thank you. Before I go to Councillor Haysom, did Mayor Bollup-Begetson, did I miss you?
No,
okay. Councillor Haysom.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think just further to Councillor Statton's point, there should be funding coming from the province to put these studies in place because it will be benefiting all the residents. So anyway, I think it might be important to kind of feed that back up the chain, that the mm-hmm. funding has to be in place for kind of every step of the way. Thanks.
Okay. No more discussion. We will move forward. Did you have anything else to say?
Maybe just Councillor Staton wanted to apologize for asking tough questions, but that's the purpose of the meeting.
That's right.
This is your capital budget. Please ask tough questions. This is an item that's in your climate change action plan. Uh-huh. You should be assessing as the money, rubber meets the road, the money where your mouth is. This is the moment where you're deciding, yeah, are we going ahead with this or not? So ask the tough questions now. Because you're making commitments starting.
Then I won't hold back.
Don't hold back. That's what it's for.
Okay. Elena.
Okay. Let's see if it's going to... Oh, there we go. We've already talked about that. My apologies. So we can move on to economic development and internet. Mr. Waters?
Yeah, this is just the last year of the internet project. It should be all complete by the end of 2023. It's just the continuation of the project that we've had on the plate for 4 years now.
Councillor Oigle, sorry.
So if it's ending the end of this year, why do we have anything in 2 and 5? What is that for?
That's in case there's ones that don't quite get complete. It's all supposed to be done by the end of 2023, but there was projects this year that were supposed to be done by the end of 2022, and due to the hurricane, they got delayed by 3 or 4 months. So we just want to make sure we've got a little bit of placeholder there.
Okay.
Thank you.
Councilor Vino.
For the purposes of the recording and for anybody who might want to follow up, I know in our workshops you mentioned with regards to Tancook Islands, what might, could, would happen with other avenues. Can you just explain that briefly?
Yeah, they're talking with Bell. They're dealing with some technical items on how they were going to get fiber to Tancook Island. I have not had a follow-up with them as of yet because it's still on the slate for 2023. So until the date passes, we don't really have a course to follow up with what they're doing. As far as we understand, as far as the agreement goes, there's fiber on Tancook Island.
Okay. Moving on.
We'll go on to wayfinding.
Sure. Okay. Next slide.
What, wayfinding?
Yeah.
We haven't talked about it yet.
No, sorry. This is just year two of the wayfinding. Year one is pretty much complete. So we're just moving to year two, doing mostly the remainder of the parks in the municipality.
Okay, right
question,
now.
Question?
Councillor Greig.
Thank you. The welcome to District of Lunenburg signs are beautiful, wonderful. I'm just wondering when the rest will be installed.
I've gone through the plan for this year. So I'll have to go by quick memory. I believe the intent is to do 2 more signs of that type this year. We need permission from landowners to erect those signs. They're very big and very expensive, and I don't want to put them up without permission. So it's one of the things that holds us up a little bit. We would do all 6 because there were 6 in total. But there are 2 spots that are a little more challenging than some other spots. So there are supposed to be 2 more going up this year.
Where are those 2 spots located?
One is on Highway 210 or 208, whichever one's done this year, 208, 210's done, so it's 208 is the other one. And coming from Queens County, heading into the Vogler Cove area, that's the other spot. And both of those are landowner approvals.
Up my way, too, needs one.
Your way is the challenging way.
My way was not done last week.
No, and it's not on the slate for next year.
Okay.
it hopefully is on the slate for the following year.
Okay, so it's more than six welcome to the district of Lunenburg signs going up then?
There's one, two, three, four, five. No, there should be six in total. Highway 10, 208, 210, coming from Queens, coming from New Ross, and coming from Chester. So six in total.
Okay, and three not done then?
No, there's two done. This two done was last year. There's two in this budget, and then there's two remaining. To six.
But didn't you name two and then one up my way as well, making
no.
three not done?
No, the one up your way is the two that are done is Highway 10.
Yeah.
210. The 210. Those two are done.
Okay.
Next year we're doing 208 and the one coming in Boggler's Cove. The two remaining are the one coming from New Ross and the one coming from Chester.
Okay, I misunderstood. I thought you meant there was only two left to do.
No. There's four in total left to do, okay. Two next year and two in following years at some point in time, but we need landowner permission.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor Statton.
Question for Dave, if I might. Since we're changing the way we do recreation, and this is between you and Trudy, I guess, why did we not put MODL's website, www.modl.ca, on those signs? For people who are traveling and might want to check something out within the municipality, is there any way to do it now, or is that something that you considered and it wasn't feasible? Or?
Yeah, it is it something that was considered? Yes, it's something that was considered. Typically, and we went through the strategy process 2 years ago, and typically you don't like to put websites on signs like that. You don't like to put anything that distracts drivers, so it's not mm-hmm. recommended to put websites because typically if you're driving by and you're trying to write down a website while you're going, it's a safety issue. So normally it's not recommended for those type of signs. They can go on other signs, and I believe they're on our Park Beacon signs because those are walk-up signs. So if you walk up to it, you can see the web address and do whatever you want. But highway signs, it's not recommended for safety issues. Trudy has.
I understand that, but I've not seen it on any of the park signs that are erected now. I haven't seen that on any of the signs. Maybe within the parks, but nothing on the entrances to the parks.
Nope.
Okay.
Yeah, there should be some, if I can speak, within the parks, because when we were looking at the design, is if people are walking within the park, they should be, and I know MARTA's checking to make sure. We've had some issues with the company we've been dealing with that hasn't necessarily translated the information we provided them accurately on the sign. So, but I can assure you that the website was one for the internal signs.
Yeah, okay. It's on the parking.
Okay, so we're going to take a 10-minute break, and then when we come back, we will start with trail development projects. Okay, everybody, we're back.
Wait, are we recording?
Yeah, still recording.
It was recording all along?
There were no microphones on. Yeah, you need two things. You've got to have a recording system going and something to pick it up.
All right. Okay.
Don't see it, Tom.
Your microphone was off. Are you happy?
We'll find out.
Ooh, hot mics.
Now we're going to go right into
trail
development projects. And who's taking the lead on this?
We'll send that over to your
recreation
director.
We have our director of recreation, yeah. Trudy Payne.
Okay, so what you see in the year one is our annual budget grants to the local trail associations. For a number of years, we've been contributing to some of their capital projects through our, I guess, gas tax funds. So that reflects that. This year, Central Nova has added 4 kilometers to the trail system in the municipality, so we have made the calculation to include the Central Nova, and years 2 to 5 reflect the amount that council has agreed to contribute each year. We have a question.
Okay, go ahead. Councillor Bell.
Ms. Payne, do we currently, MODL, have a lease agreement with the province for these trails that we're using? Is that how we get access to them?
So we don't have the letters of authority. It's the 6 trail groups and, well, the Central Nova, I guess, 7 trail groups that would have the letters of authority. What we have been, I guess, we've been providing them financial resources and human resources through our Trails and Open Space Coordinator to provide support and help them navigate through the system that's presented by the provincial and federal funding. So we don't hold the letters of authority. They do, but we're able to spend gas tax because it was changed in the last agreement that as long as it's a piece of public infrastructure, it doesn't have to be owned by the municipality. You can still contribute, but it has to be for capital projects.
Again, Councillor Bell, and then Mayor Bolivar-Getson.
I actually think that the trails is one of the best assets that this municipality ever got involved in. But the reason I asked that question, recently on ATV News, they said that Kings County just purchased rail trails from the province. I would like to own them, if there's a possibility of owning them, when the current letters of authority expire, because I wouldn't like to see them get bought up or given away like we ran into a problem on Highway 10. So is there any way that we can express interest to the province that should they not renew these letters of authority, that we might buy it? Because I understand Kings County didn't pay too much.
I take the direction from council. So if council would like to provide that direction, I can certainly... I know that there is an application process that you can go through with Department of Natural Resources or... I think it's natural resources and renewables, if you have interest in properties. And we could certainly go through that process.
I'm going to go over to Mayor Bolivar-Getson.
If I can recollect, I believe that there are different agreements with different municipalities throughout the province, and there are municipalities that do own the trails through their municipalities. But it was how it was set up originally when the province divested of. I believe that municipalities did have an option similar to what they did when they divested of other pieces of infrastructure along the way. But I understand Councillor Bell's concern from the perspective of when they did first divest of the rail bed, abutting landowners had that option to purchase. And that's what really caused us the grief in our municipality when it comes to being able to maintain connectivity throughout our municipality. And when they built the Trunk 10, 2 things factored into that LaHave River Trail. It was the reconstruction of Trunk 10 along with the divestiture to the abutting landowners at that time.
We have CAO Tom McEwen.
Yeah, and just on that, Councillor Bell, are you referring to East and West Hants recently purchasing 60 kilometers?
Now that you say it, yes.
Yeah, so they purchased that, I think, for $430,000, and it's 60 kilometers of trail from the Dominion Atlantic Railway. In the Annapolis Valley, the rail bed is still owned by a Texas rail company, and they continue to get some form of tax rebate because, believe it or not, even though there's no rail on it, it is still considered an operating railway.
Through Windsor.
Right to Wolfville. So in Kings, when you're trying to deal with putting things on the rail bed, you deal directly with the rail company. I used to know the fellow's name. He's from Texas. He was in Jimmy Carter's government as a secretary. It might come to me during the meeting. If it is, I'll drop you a note. But it's different types of ownership is part of what's the challenge.
Okay, if I may, my concern with that would be right now we give operating grants to the trail associations. I don't know if we own the trails, what that would mean with our operating budget, if it would be make a difference or not. Anyway, okay, so.
If I may, I mean, we certainly could write the government to say if they're looking at ever divesting it that we have the first right. And just so that we could have something in writing and correspondence to the minister. You know, it's certainly running fairly well with the six trail groups. They're, you know, with our support, they're carrying the heavier load. But I do understand Councillor Bell's concern from future public use.
Councillor, why not?
If we aren't, do we assume any liability? Can actions?
Yeah. Yeah, so I think that's a discussion that for another meeting, and but right now we're going to leave these annual contributions in place. Okay. Any more discussion on that? Moving on, Elena.
Thank you, Trudy. If you'd like to continue, please.
Sorry, Trudy. Go
no,
ahead.
That's all right. Yeah. So this is the Art on the Trail. We had $15,000 for Art on the Trail this year. That did not happen, so we're asking that to be carried over, combined with the $18,000 that was in the five-year capital plan. So making year one the $33,000 with the plan of installing 3 to 4 pieces of Art on the Trail, and we've named it Art on the Trail, but I know there's been conversation around perhaps installing some in our park systems, so that may happen. So it could be Art/Park on the Trail, Art on the Trail Park. And then that it's a reflection of the $92,000 is the $18,000 over the next 2 to 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Questions? Go continue.
So the next one is the Osprey Village Active Transportation Connection, which is the pedestrian bridge over Highway 103. So it's part of our Osprey Village Growth Center strategic priority. I think that's still moving forward. We're just waiting. I'm not sure. Steve, do you have anything you can say about that?
Sure, yes. Sorry, I'm a little under the weather today, but I'll see if I can get through. We're just the Trunk 10 upgrading done by Public Works was a little shift in the alignment, which has delayed our design, but it's well in design, and we're getting ready to have a tender package. And we did meet with Nova Scotia Power about relocation of some power poles, and we do have to have a start date of September of 2023, and that's for our funding to get the 73.3% funding. We have to have a start date by this September, so we're full bore on this one, and we do have some land acquisition as well that we're working on. But we do have to have it tendered by and started by September.
Okay. Any discussion? If I may, to myself, do we have an off ramp? Pardon the expression, but do we have an off ramp on this project? I mean, we're looking at $6 million, $7 million, $9 million over the next 2 years, not including the $700,000 this year. I'm just asking the question. I really don't want to get down a rabbit hole. No, I don't mean I don't know what I mean. But it just seems like it's a project that has a big number to it, and it's important. But are we moving forward with it?
So perhaps I could just comment on the routing. It's going to run all the way from the Irving along in front of the all-weather along that side, all the way down across the 103 and past the Cookeville Wastewater Treatment Plant, and then it crosses over there up to the Canadian Tire. And a lot of the cost isn't the actual bridge. It's actually the connecting trails on either side. Because of the steep slopes on the side, there's a fair amount of significant retaining wall structures that have to be built to accommodate the trail. So that's actually probably a bigger number in the overall project than the bridge itself, if that helps any.
Okay, thank you. Mayor Balavagetson?
I guess we do have a federal announcement on Monday, the 13th. I believe it's Monday the 13th, yes, for two projects that we have applied for federal funding for, this being one.
And I guess if you mind, Madam Chair, to add, is we do have a 73% grant, so we're building a $9.7 million bridge for about 2.5 municipal cost. So that is something that we considered, I think, when... Yeah, 73.3%
in year two, the $7 million is that could be covered by 73%?
Yes.
It's offset with grants.
Okay, thank you.
Yes,
okay.
If that's helpful.
Perfect. All right.
Okay,
good. Continue.
Sure.
Judy, Elena?
Do you want to speak to Indian Falls?
Yeah,
Rudy?
I can speak to that. So I believe when I first came back, there was an award to do a trail at Indian Falls. That was around $90,000. We had heard word from our contractor that they couldn't do it till spring, so that part of that $165,000 is the carryover, and the other $75,000 is for an additional trail that expansion, another loop in Indian Falls that was in the five-year plan, I guess, or in the plan for Indian Falls for trail expansion. So that's the total of the 165 to finish off last year's and to do an additional section.
Councillor Statton.
Thank you. To Trudy, is this an extension of La Have River Trail?
No. This would be within Indian Falls Park, so it would be a AT trail. So for walking and biking, so it's within the park itself, so it would be a feature within that.
But not for motorized?
Not for motorized, and it doesn't connect to the motorized sections of the trail.
Thank you.
Okay. Councillor Oikle.
And Will, I'm just wondering if the new additional trail expansion, if it will all be completed before the fall.
The intention, if this gets approved, is we'd be putting an RFP for that additional extension so that it would get completed this year.
Okay. Mayor Balavagetson?
So where it's a carryover, nothing's been done last year at all?
$90,000 is the carryover, so no, it hasn't been done. So that would be started in the spring once the snow breaks, and then the additional $75,000 is for an additional loop. So we'd be looking at routing that, putting the RFP out and getting that done as well. So we'd be coming back for an award for that section.
Okay, my understanding was we were only moving forward with the
carryover. And if we're only going to move forward with carryover, then I'd be looking at $90,000. But the
until we get our parks workshop and then decide where we went from there with our park expansions.
Okay, so you want that noted as a change? Mayor Balavagetson?
I guess it's the cart before the horse in some incidences here when we're trying to do this capital budget, because we are having a workshop in relation to park standards and so on, and which parks we're going to prioritize to move forward with more dollars. So I guess I'm just caught in, we took the other ones off the list for that reason. And put them in a bundle. I would rather see, I guess, the extra money in a bundle.
Sure.
Until we go through that and decide which parks those are going to be for additional funds this year.
The only caution that I have is, as I mentioned earlier, is the park standards is really that 30-foot view of how we're going to classify them, the minimum standards. I'm not sure if we're going to be at the point of actually prioritizing which parks does, you know, that we want this in this park, we want this in this park, and that is part of my concern of the expectation this afternoon. I think it's going to help us get one step closer. Once the park audits are done and the community consultations will even get us closer. But I don't want to set an expectation from that workshop that might not result.
Councillor Stanton, then Councillor Greek.
Thank you. I have the same concern that we're allotting money in a budget and we don't know. We have other parks that need a lot of work and we don't know until we have the workshop what we're doing in which parks and have some standards set. So we're allotting money here to extend a park that's already operating well, and we have other parks that need the dollars put in them. So my concern is that we're allocating funds before we really know where they should go the most.
Trudy?
Yeah, my understanding is that the intent was to have both of them done last year, the two extensions, but the original one came in over budget. And so we were looking at adding the 75 for the second trail. But what it sounds like I'm hearing is that you want the carryover. I have no issues with postponing the additional trail expansion until after that. I was just trying to follow through on the plans that was previously put in place. But that's fine. If council would like to remove that or put it in the bigger pot.
I have Councillor Greek. I'd like to hear from her. It's in her district.
Thank you. I don't want it removed. Currently, what's there developed as a trail is less than 1 kilometer, and the 90,000 would extend it by how far?
Another kilometer, but
so
I can confirm that.
So that's still under 2 kilometers of trails. This is a major tourist attraction. People mm-hmm. come.
They do. It's a destination.
All over the place to come to Indian Falls. So for 75,000
would add additional trail.
So that would be another kilometer?
It's about another kilometer.
Okay. So that would bring up to 3 kilometers for guests and residents to walk safely there.
An additional feature to the park, yes.
Yes. I would really like that kept there.
Councillor Oigle.
Which could easily be added in years later, right, to help upgrade the other, because 2 kilometers is a nice long walk.
Councillor Hobley. Deputy Mayor Hobley, sorry.
I think that we should move it into the pot until after the workshop. Yes. We need to have more information. Yes.
Councillor Greek.
What's the 90,000 that's there? Does that take you down that cliff with the hanging rope that people use, or would the 75,000 include that loop?
No, it wouldn't include that. I think that's a question you can ask Marta. She's more in tuned, but it would take us past that where the rope is. I do believe
and make it
more safe.
Yes.
Yeah.
So right now it's a liability with that rope hanging from trees that people are using to climb up and down that cliff.
Mm-hmm. That's the other side. You mean where they're swinging off?
No, not where they're swinging.
You mean down
up
by the riverbed?
So you get to the stairs, and then you take the footpath to the second swimming hole. To get down to the second swimming hole is the rope down the bank, down the cliff, that people climb down and then pull themselves back up with the rope. So is that...
Okay, I have too many voices at one time. We have Councillor Greek.
I'm just wondering if these trail expansions will create a safer way to get down that bank.
Yes.
Okay, that should stay.
Okay, is the consensus that we leave that stay, or do we remove it and put it in the mix?
I'm going around the table. Now, you understand? Did you want to explain again what happens there?
When you do the current less than kilometer loop and the stairs are there, there's the footpath that many, many people take. And there's lots of signs saying use at your own risk. These footpaths are not maintained. You go along the footpaths. You get to, you're up over the top of the hill. There's a bank that goes down to the second swimming hole. It is, somebody tied a rope there to make it a little easier to get down. You can use the rope, or you can slide down. My kids slide down. I clamber down.
I don't like my mother going down it when she's with us. Yes, that would be wonderful. When we went a couple weeks ago with 4-H, there were 30 of us. Very few adults would actually go down that bank. So when you're done, you climb back up, and you use the rope to get back up and hope that it doesn't let go. And then you're back up top.
So we'd like to clarify that the piece of property that you're talking about is not owned by MODL.
There are signs saying use footpaths at your own discretion.
So if it's on the side, that's where the river, and that's why we wanted to put the trail, and we started with the trail, so it's a little safer. It's not the opposite side where people swing and jump off the private property. I just want to clarify that.
It is
on the side of our property.
What I'm going to do right now is I'm going to leave Trudy finish, and then I'm going over to Deputy CAO Alex.
Yeah, so it would be on our side, what Councillor Greek is referring to.
Okay.
Hence why we want to put trails so that it's safer to transfer throughout the Indian Falls property. I was actually quite surprised when I walked the trail, to be honest, that we owned as much property as we do on Indian Falls. So creating the trail section makes it way more usable and adds another feature to the park that currently really, in my mind, before putting some of the trails in, was you went in and you had a look-off and you had a bit of a picnic area. And, yes, people were going there. It's a destination for people to jump off the cliff and to jump in the water. That is not our property. I'm going to clarify. That's not MODL's property. That's private property. So we can't control what folks do. But there should be some upgrades if we want people to use the property that we actually own there from a trails perspective. In saying that, if I'm trying to come and read the room, the compromise could be to put the 75 in the bigger block when we have a better conversation around the park's standards, because you're not losing it in the budget. You're just putting it in a different place. That's just my...
Okay, I have... No, okay. Mayor Bolivar gets him.
And I guess that was the intent until we... Because I guess if I'm hearing there's a rope there that somebody else tied there, I'm not sure why we leave it there. If it's a safety concern, because that's on us. That liability comes back to us, knowing it.
Did you want to speak?
But I guess if we put it in the big pot, it's not saying that it's not going to happen. It's saying that we need to look at our standards and our expectations for this year to see where the money needs to be prioritized. And that's why we've got the Sherbrooke Lakes and the everybody else is out here, and new parks that are wanting to come forward that we're hearing in relation to the Riverport school property and other things that we need to prioritize before we can move forward with a capital budget this year. We have to do that.
Okay, so what direction are we taking here? Are we leaving it? Are we putting
we're
it in the...
Money.
Are we leaving it?
Yeah. In the pot.
What are the two options that we have? One at a time, what are the two options? Okay.
I believe your recreation director has clarified the $75,000, which is for expanding the trail,
okay,
will move out of this line,
yeah,
into the other line. So it's still in the budget,
okay,
but it's not identified in this particular,
okay,
project, because this particular project is just the carryover
90,000
to finish. Exactly.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
So the project's still in your capital budget, but it's not identified as a separate line. It's in the other pot of money, which will be prioritized where you're going to send it.
All right. Councillor Hazen?
Thanks. So just to clarify again, this $90,000 is to address which part of the trail? Will this address the area with the rope?
It is my understanding, but I will get clarity from,
okay,
Marta, and
thank
she
you
can clarify that at our workshop this,
okay,
afternoon.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Moving on.
Thanks for all the questions. So the MARC existing trail upgrade, so this is what was budgeted last year. It didn't get done, so we're asking for it to be carried over to upgrade to deal with ditching, culverts, and surfacing on the existing trails at the MARC, and they do need some work to be upgraded so that they're more safe and usable.
Okay. Any questions so far? Thank you. Continue.
I'll let engineering take this one.
I think this was pre-approved by council just last week.
Yes.
it was. So
yes.
So we do have it on record that it is the trail connector within Osprey Village. We have our approvals, and they're going to – the design is done, and we're going to tender, I believe. So that's –
Yeah, sorry, Eileen, I'll just add that we just sent it out for external review with our legal and insurance, our tender package. So it is very nearing to being issued as a tender.
Okay, good. Now, parks and open space projects. Who's taking this lead, Trudy or Elena?
So I think a decision was made quite some time ago that each year the $50,000 is put aside from the operating into our open space reserves so that we're building that pot in case there's opportunities in future years to purchase or upgrade open spaces that we own.
Councillor Haysom.
Thank you so much. I would like Council to just refer back to some of our work on our climate change project, and one of the things that our residents said, it was actually the most common response, was that acquiring land for conservation was their biggest priority. So I just wonder if we're looking at that amount of $50,000 a year, if it shouldn't be increased. And I'm not necessarily suggesting we do that this year, but if that's not something that we should consider for future years.
If I could speak to that, the Open Space Fund gets money a few different ways. So we have $50,000 a year that we earmark in our capital budget for land purchases. So it's kind of a placeholder. Where the money really comes from is in the sale of existing lands, any of the development agreements that we do. There's in lieu of land for open space, we get money from developers. And so far this year, I think we've got $190,000 that will be going right into the open space reserves. As well, there's $60,000 a year that comes out of the operating budget annually into the open space reserves. So this is kind of the purchase side. We just put a number in there so that there's some money there as land becomes available. But the funding really does come from those other places. So there is $60,000 a year coming directly out of the operating budget plus any of the money we get from development agreements. So it that pot can, and any land sales. So as we start selling land, there'll be more money being put into our open space reserve so we can use it for land purchases as council deems, you know, as the land comes available and you decide which land you want to purchase, if that helps.
Councillor Haysom.
Thank you for the supplementary question. I just understood, though, I believe that land sales was going back to park development, no? Did you not say that... Sale of land was going back to park upgrades?
$50,000. And we have an open space. Maybe I should need clarity. So if we don't use the $50,000, does this go back into a capital reserve if we don't purchase?
It's only taking money out of that fund. So there's, okay. Yes, that's correct. It just stays in the capital reserve and continues to build.
Yeah, and so then we could use that for capital upgrades or purchasing property. So if we want, like, so we could use our open space reserves if we were upgrading a park, if council so chose, to use that money.
But we haven't in the past.
To upgrade the parks.
No.
We typically have used it to purchase property.
Yes.
But it could be, based on the MGA, yes, to be used to upgrade.
Councillor Oigle.
But I do agree with Councillor Haysom. It was mentioned here, whether it was in a workshop or here, that when we sell property, that money was going to be going towards
We're going to have parks. Clarification from our CAO.
Yeah, just to clarify, in the past, when you did subdivision, prior to taking money, we took land. We now have identified that land as being surplus, and it was going through a sale process under the divestiture of land policy. That land, by statute, when sold, the value of it has to be used for parks and open space purposes. So one potential use of that is upgrading parks. Another potential use is acquiring open space. But all those decisions have to be made by council. So it's a council at the end of the day that makes a decision on which priorities are going to get that money and which aren't. So there's only two possible uses for that money. If we sell land that we didn't acquire through subdivision process, that's capital funds that can be used for capital purposes. So there's a distinction.
Okay. Any more questions on that? If not, we're going to move forward. Who's taking the lead?
I thought I was done.
I can perhaps,
go ahead,
sorry, Trudy, perhaps I'll take
Stephen
this one. Yes. This is the road going into Indian Falls, and there's presently two culverts that wash out, and we have had the design complete, and it's a significant catchment area, so there's a fair amount of water going through that water course, and it's also been deemed to be fish habitat. So there's going to be one significant, to replace the two small existing ones, there's going to be one large culvert, and where it's fish habitat, they have to have baffles in them, and it has to be installed between the May-September window. So that's it turned out a fair amount of engineering work went into, design work went into this replacement of culvert. So that's proposed for this summer.
Okay. And where do we continue from here? Who do we continue with?
Sawpit Park. So $29,000 was budgeted last year for a community plan for Sawpit, and that wasn't completed. So this is a carryover to complete that, and that the Sawpit committee is anticipating is going to be completed.
$29,000. I thought you said $12 million.
If I did, it was definitely a slip.
12. Okay. So that's all for, and then we have Wallace Lake.
It's a wharf assessment for Sawpit, and Trudy can speak to that.
So this is one of our wharfs, and we've been advised every 5 years we should be doing assessments. Mm-hmm. So from having a marine engineer go in, do an assessment on that's what's underneath the water to make sure it's sound. So we're budgeting to make sure that assessment gets done this year.
Okay.
And this is Wiles Lake. This is for the community and concept plan for the future development of Wiles Lake.
So, Councilor Oikle?
I believe the mayor was going to speak first.
Well, I guess, are we jumping the gun here, too, before we do our parks and to decide where we're going with community consultation compared to council priorities, whatever, and I'm just asking that question. Again, if this $50,000 should be here, I would put it in the pot until after we have our meeting to decide how we're going to move forward here.
Perhaps
this isn't a carryover, correct?
No, it's not a carryover.
All right.
I think it will become more clear from the recommendations in the Park Standards Workshop. From a staff's perspective, we do see this as kind of a clean slate, and it is a facility that does currently get used.
Yep.
But it is a facility that you can really start from, I guess I'll use an artist, like it's really a blank easel. If from an accessibility point of view, it's relatively flat. There's a lot of opportunities to make this, in our mind, what we're going to be labeling as a regional park, is whether you agree with us when we go through the park standards. But from a staff's perspective, we do feel that there should be some community consultation and really developing that concept plan for that park from the ground up.
So, again, I think we should just put it in the pot, and we'll know that very shortly.
Okay, so is the... Okay, Councilor Oikle.
I just wanted to say that I'm really glad that we're even thinking about Wiles Lake finally after all these years of having it. And I was just wondering if we can, I'd like to know if you could comment now or maybe perhaps in our workshop regarding how that community and concept plan will go forth to the community to get their feedback. Like, how are we planning to get that feedback?
Yes, so I'd be looking at very similar to what we'd be doing with the MARC. We would be looking at hiring a consultant to do a number of methods to engage the community. That could be, we'd leave that up to the consultants, but I'm envisioning like some surveys, either electronically, public meetings, stakeholder engagement. So are there, you know, specific groups within that area that we should be consulting with? Are there near businesses that we should be consulting with? So we'd be looking at that whole plan, and then that's how we would get the feedback, bring that back to council. There'd be different check-in points with council, and then we'd be looking at developing that concept plan so that we could look at actually implementing it, whether that's in year one or a phased approach. It would all depend upon what came for that community consultation and what council agreed to the concept plan moving forward.
You're welcome.
Okay, so what's the decision here? Are we leaving it here, or are we moving it to the bigger pot? I'm going around. Councilor Vino.
I agree that the Parks Workshop will bring out a lot of this, so it might end up right back here. So
Sweet. Yeah.
Pot.
Councilor Greek. Councilor Stanton.
The pot.
Pot.
even though I'm hoping that it'll come back,
yeah.
The pot. Okay. I do agree that it should be.
Okay. The pot.
Okay. Okay. So we have a direction there. Oh, Councillor Greek.
Thank you, Chair. I'm just wondering if a bit more could be explained about what the pot is, and also an explanation on why Sherbrooke Lake development is no longer listed on the capital project list, and also with that, if the $200,000 in reserves would still be set aside for Sherbrooke Lake development.
Okay, Elena?
I can answer about the money, that there is $200,000 still sitting there for Sherbrooke Lake. The pot that you're talking about is up on your corporate infrastructure and accessibility. It's on page one. It's a third line down. It starts with $215,000, and there's $625,000, $375,000, $425,000, and $275,000. So there's a significant amount of money in that pot. So anything that you've asked to move up, we'll just put into that $215,000 in year one to add to it. So we have earmarked over $1 million for that, $1.5 million, I think. So I think that's probably what, you know, your workshops and as you move forward with determining your park standards will help you address that, if that's helpful.
Mayor Balopagetson?
I guess the pot became evident when we took out individual parks that were identified for our capital project this year until after we have our parks workshop to see what money will be used on which parks and where council prioritizes the parks going forward.
More discussion? Councillor Greig?
Can we clarify that Sherbrooke Lake is not off the table? Just because it's not on the list in front of us of the capital projects.
I don't know what you want me to. I think the purpose of the park standards workshop is to identify the current parks that we have and the minimum standard that we want to bring them to, because my understanding is the direction of this council is to bring up the parks to a consistent standard, because we've already got investments, people are already using those, but it doesn't preclude in future for council to make decisions around developing new parks. My understanding is the focus is on bringing the parks that we currently own and operate, because they're our responsibility to maintain them and it's our liability. So before we proceed in developing something new, we're going to make sure what we have is where we want it to be.
Does that answer your question sufficiently? Okay, perfect. So Sherbrooke Lake is
We own the property.
We own the property, yes.
So it would be up to council's yep. direction. We're always at council's direction.
Right.
My understanding is the current direction is we're focusing on the parks that we own.
Okay, perfect. And that we use. Yeah.
And that we use. Yeah.
Okay. Moving on.
So the next item is the pickleball courts as part of a bigger active living park that we were hoping to achieve. So This is a prior priority in being carried over to design and construct outdoor pickleball courts, and we have monies in for other amenities in the future to be determined.
Okay, moving on.
You want to speak to that? You can.
Who's taking the ATV shoulders?
So I'll take those.
All right,
so,
Trudy.
My understanding is we put a placeholder of $150,000 each year so that we're building the pot in case there's an opportunity for paved shoulders that's in the five-year capital plan that Public Works puts out each year. This year, I believe the direction is we're not proceeding with a particular AT paved project, but we're putting that $150,000 placeholder in so that it's there for future investment.
Mayor Balla-Pagetson?
And I guess one of the biggest reasons is the cost associated with the active transportation paved shoulders. So leads me to my next question is, are we even in the ballpark anymore with $150,000 a year to be able to move forward with our policy to pave shoulders as transportation advises us that they are taking that road down to the core? Because our policy states at that point, that's when we would get involved with active transportation. And $150,000, I guess, what do the, come in now, a kilometer?
175 is what I'm hearing around the table.
A kilometer. And usually when transportation paves a road, it's at least 5 to 10 kilometers at a time. So I'm just looking, and I don't think there's a big reserve in that pot. Am I correct on that?
There's none.
That is correct. The fund is council depleted. Council has depleted it in other paving projects.
It's not in the hole, though, correct?
No, it's not in the hole. Okay. No,
we can't go
don't
in
do
the
that.
Minuses
no.
for those pots, right?
Certainly, no, but we...
I know we took money to do other J-class roads, and
correct.
It came... So I'm just asking that question to make sure that... So I guess it's something that council does need to realize is that $150,000 does not pave a kilometer of shoulders.
Councilor Vino.
Does DOT ever take it upon themselves to just put in a paved shoulder without coming to the municipality to
yes,
do it?
Yes, they do. Yeah. If it's on the blue route, they'll automatically okay. do it.
I'm asking specifically about the 332 in First South. I noticed it was paved and had an extended shoulder, but I don't remember that project coming to council. So,
Okay, so I have Elena, then Mayor Balla-Pagetson.
So the answer is yes, they sometimes do that then.
And actually it was, if I threw it through your Honor, we did have it on our list, and then we found out that the province was going to pave it as part of their blue route, so we took it off our list.
Okay.
So we were very lucky in that regard.
Mayor Balla-Pagetson?
So when they started with paved shoulders, I believe the pilot was the Hebville Road, and they paved the Hebville Road from the town limits to the, or the shoulders on that from the town limits to the 103, and they did 100% of that cost. When we started inquiring to see about other roads, that's where our policy came into play and how we could guarantee that they would be done and when they could be done.
Follow and up. Can you just explain what the blue route is or what that means by the blue route?
So the blue route is a bicycle trail, I guess, for lack of a better word, that the province has identified that for a cycling route. And so if it falls, and Bicycle Nova Scotia has led that project, and they have mapped out what the blue route is across the province. And so the province has agreed with their own active transportation policy. If they're upgrading any highways that fall within the blue route, they'll automatically include paved shoulders. Okay. If it doesn't fall within the blue route and municipalities want the paved shoulders, it's really up to us. And that's the same, you know, I know they negotiate with other municipalities as well around paved shoulders. And I just want to note that we are updating our active transportation plan this year. We've received a $50,000 grant to do so. So that might actually inform us more moving forward around what we should be allocating in our active transportation.
Okay, thank you for the explanation. No more questions. We will move to J-class roads.
Yeah, I think our director of recreation just spoke to the AT plan
have
a grant.
Yeah. All right.
Certainly, no problem. So, and we've discussed this many times, the J-Class Roads Paving Partnership. We've put in $350,000 a year for partnerships with NS Public Works. Council already has a list into them of 3.12 kilometers for the Point Road, Darby's Head, St. Augustine, Riverside, Freeman, Riverview, and Church, and that's right off of your own paving policy, as if the roads don't get paved, we keep them at the top of the list until they do.
Mayor Bolopagetson?
And again, this is not only for J-class roads, this is for municipally owned roads as well, if no J-class roads are approved, or if whatever exists during the service exchange, which is coming down very soon.
Okay. Thank you. And ready to move on? Go ahead.
Certainly. So we'll move down to wastewater and environmental protection projects, water, wastewater, and environmental protection. Green compost carts, those are purchased by the MJSB on our behalf. So they kind of tell us how much a year they think it's going to cost for us to provide, you know, one cart per resident per dwelling. And so they buy them and store them, and they are distributed through our trucking contract or garbage collection contract. Mm-hmm. So that's $60,000 a year.
Okay, Osprey Village Water Tower.
I think engineering probably could speak to this.
And we have our Director of Engineering, Stephen.
Sure. Stephen here. Just report that Council was just awarded the design RFP to CBCL Engineering, so they're going to be starting to work on the design. So things are moving along fairly well on this one now.
Okay. Councilor Stanton.
Thank you, and maybe you can't tell us this, but I know there was two properties looked at on the Hill Why Not Road, and have we chosen one, and can you tell us which one, or is that still private information, confidential information?
I know Tom is negotiating with the landowner there. It has been identified, and it is acceptable. The site we have in mind is acceptable for the design purposes with CBCL, so we're moving ahead with that assumption, and I think Tom is handling the land negotiations.
Okay, Tom?
Yep, so thank you. So the site that was recommended by Design Point and accepted by the Public Service Commission is the property owned by the Cooks, and it's across from where the Eastlink Tower is. So they have their main parcel, and then they have a second parcel, which is in behind, I think, the Russian farm, where they grow quail. So we're looking at a portion of that for the water tower, and then we'd be accessing that through the same right-of-way that Eastlink is using for their tower. So we're in discussions with the Cooks on that.
Okay, thank you. Okay, moving on.
We're moving into wastewater treatment, and I think our wastewater treatment engineer, Larry, could come up and speak to his wastewater projects, perhaps, starting with the annual large pump rebuilding and replacement program.
Welcome, Larry.
Thank you. I guess we introduced a new program, an annual program to rebuild or replace our larger wastewater pumps. We outlined, I guess, the schedule that we're looking at for New Germany, Hebbville, and Hebbville would only be done if we don't do the future larger capital program in a couple of years' time.
Questions? Well, continue.
Cookfield plant expansion.
So the RFP for design services closes this Thursday. So we're hoping to have a report to council for the March 28th meeting, provided the review of those proposals are straightforward.
Okay. Questions for Larry? Okay, moving on. Hepville pump stations.
No. Cookville INI.
We're still on I. Okay, yes, INI.
So I believe that's a carry forward project. We started this project last year. We completed the video and sewer cleaning in November. The consultant, the XP, is looking at, reviewing those videos and continuing with their reporting. We're potentially going to be doing some flow monitoring this year, and through the video review, we found one location that requires a repair, so we're hoping to do that as part of that $50,000 this coming year.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? Moving on.
Conquerall Bank I&I.
So that's a new project. It was identified in previous reports, annual reports to environment, that we are experiencing significant I&I influence in the Conquerall Bank system. And we indicated to environment that we were going to investigate further. So again, the sewer video and cleaning work that was done in November didn't reveal any obvious issues with the municipality's infrastructure. So we'd like to, I guess, continue that investigation. It, again, will probably include some flow monitoring so that we, I guess, we can identify which part of the system may be providing that that influence that we don't want. So it will be engaging a consultant, likely doing some monitoring, and having the consultant prepare a report to us of their findings and recommendations for improvements.
Okay, thank you. Questions? Okay.
The Conquerall Bank caustic soda system?
That we've had a pilot program for about 2 years. It was a temporary system introduced in consultation with Nova Scotia Environment to allow us to do some trial periods to adjust our pH on the system. So we have 2 years of data. It's worked out well for us. Environment is in agreement that that system will work on a go-forward basis. So we're looking to make that system a more permanent system. Essentially, we're looking at, I guess, engaging a consultant to potentially expand our building, recommend a more automated system to allow us to inject caustic sodas, and then also monitor the pH and I guess, upgrade our SCADA system so that our wastewater operators can keep an eye on it from the Cookeville plant as well.
Councilor Oigle.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was listening to what you were saying, but then I wasn't following along on my paper here. But if we can go back to the annual large pump rebuilding replacement program, and you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 pumps, and will they be done with the 10,000, or are they being spread out over the 5 years?
10,000 is essentially for one pump.
For so one pump.
Each year we're looking at doing one large pump.
And then with the Hebville pump station access, you have down the entire system, including 3 pump stations. So is each pump a pump station?
There are 2 pumps in each pump station.
Okay.
And we would only do, like, we would only do the Hebville system as part of the annual program if Hebville is not upgraded in the future. So we're I guess we're not focusing on Hebville in the first year so that we hopefully get a better understanding if we are going to upgrade the Hebville system in future years before we invest in that system.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right. No more questions. Moving on.
The New Germany I&I.
You turn your mic off, Councilor Oigle.
Oh.
And that's Larry,
yeah.
Jeremy I&I.
That was a pre-approved project by council, so we have been working with the consultant to update that tender. They indicated a couple of weeks to update the tender, and, of course, we'll be issuing that, and we'll bring the tender back to council for approval.
Thank you. And then we have New Germany Pump Station 6 upgrade.
That's a carryover project. We, I guess, had some delays with getting approvals through Nova Scotia Power and Bell Alliant. I think we started that process last August, and we're just getting, I guess, confirmation on the approval process. So we weren't able to complete that project last year, so we're intending to complete it this year.
Okay, thank you. Moving on. Dry wells.
Yeah, that's the last project on our capital plan. I believe the Deputy CAO could speak to that water resiliency dry well budget.
And who's doing that? Oh, Alex. Okay.
So council recently made a decision that we are going to look at exploring a non-potable water source for agricultural supply, and we're also going to develop a draft bylaw for council to consider, which would allow for the financing of wells on private homes. So the installation would happen, and then we would finance it for the residents.
Okay. Thank you. Oh, there we go. So what does this come back? This comes back again because there was a few changes, correct?
Yes, this will come back as per your schedule.
Yes. Seen at the beginning of the slides.
Yes, you saw at the beginning of the slide, so it will come back.
Okay. Was there any more questions before we move on? Councilor Haysom?
Thanks, to the chair.
Councilor Haysom has the floor.
Thank you. I guess I'm just wondering if we are going to have a discussion about the implications of taking on, of how we're financing this capital plan. We sort of alluded to it in the intro presentation, and I just want to know when we are going to discuss that and what the appetite is from council for the different options that are available to us.
Okay, Elena?
Certainly, I guess I could have put a slide up on that.
The slide would help again, yeah.
And I don't have it, I don't think, do I have it in, other than the pie charts? Like, if you look at the back end of your agenda package on that last page where it talks about funding, so there's no borrowing in year one of this plan. And so essentially, this is the plan. Mm-hmm. So council approves year one. You approve the five-year plan, but you're not giving staff any go-aheads to start on year two.
Right.
Okay. So you're approving it as a whole. Yeah. So if you're interested in drawing more reserves, we could look at that if you want us to, or we could leave it as is with some kind of potential borrowing in years 2 to 5. That's certainly up to council, but to me, those are the options that we have before us right now.
So right now, our projects right now will cost us no borrowing. We will not have to borrow
year one.
That's right. In 23-24, there is no capital borrowing requirement.
And we have not. We are projecting borrowing between years 2 and 5, but we are not
obligated
to do that at this time. Upon approving those projects, yes.
Yes. I think perhaps the wastewater treatment plant at Cookeville is needed. And we've so there may be options to fund that. We will look at that as we go forward. I can't tell you that's the number. It's going to be give or take, right? But it certainly is. It's on the table, I believe.
Okay. Councilor
Haysom? I do appreciate that, and I understand that what we're looking at right now is year one. However, I think we do also look at this budget as a five-year process, and we will be in this very position faster than you will believe, where we're having the same conversation. So I just want to ensure that there is room and time for us to talk about what those implications are as a group, because it's coming up, and it's coming up quickly. So, it's the nature of budgeting that you put stuff off and you plan ahead. So I want to make sure that we're accurately planning ahead and are going to be comfortable with where we are this time next year. So can I ask that we have an opportunity to have that conversation? Okay, thank you.
Of course, yes.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. Okay. Councilor Oikle?
No.
Oh, good. Anything else? No. So, no added items, no in camera. Motion to adjourn. It's just that Alex was looking at me. He's like, we're ready to adjourn, right?
Sure.
Okay. Councillor, why not?
Seconded by Councillor Haysom. All those in favor? Motion carried unanimously. We are now adjourned.
10 minutes.
10 minutes, and then we'll 10 minutes, and then we'll start our parks workshop. Okay.
We have a meeting.